Okay, this is the executive officer's report, and I'm just the hearing officer today. I'm not the executive officer, so I'm just going to introduce these items, and then if you have questions, Roger will answer them, or other staff that is knowledgeable about these issues will answer them for you. So first we have our routine list of the status and recently issued water quality certifications. That's in the table format as we typically give it to you. Do you have any questions?
Yes, I noticed that on a number of items it says complete application has been received and review has not begun. Some of these seem like projects that need to be constructed promptly to resolve issues. Are they able to proceed at all, or are all these projects held up until staff completes their review?
Generally speaking, the water quality certification has to be issued before they can.
Before things start.
Yeah. Some of these are probably close or have advanced beyond what the status here says. I was just looking at some of the dates when you made that comment.
Mm-hmm. But I just hate the idea that we're holding up things that need to be taken care of.
Yeah.
Lisa, isn't there also a time limit where it's deemed approved if we don't act on it?
Yes, that's true. Thank you for saying that. If we don't act within, I think it's 30 days, yeah. Once an application is deemed complete, then it is, Jessica wants to clarify, 60, thank you. So if we don't act in 60 days on a complete application that's identified as complete, that there's an automatic certification issued.
Okay, so they can go ahead and proceed.
So they can go. So
if
then
they don't hear from you.
Yeah, okay. It's not accurate what I said previously.
Yeah, I agree with the point, I think, because many of these projects require also a fish and game permit, and the deadline for any activity in Blue Line Stream is usually around September, October, before the rainfall. So if a permit is not issued by then, you know, they've got to move it to next year.
Mm-hmm. Okay, the next item, the executive officer's report, is a summary of the results of a grant project that was demonstrating best management practices for vegetable production. These were grant funds awarded to the University of California Cooperative Extension and under project direction by Dr. Tim Hartz. And the project demonstrated the implementation of efficient irrigation and nutrient management practices for coastal vegetable production in Monterey County. I think it was mostly lettuce. And the results showed that total fertilizer application can be reduced substantially with minimal risk of reduced yield or quality for the lettuce crops. And the results also showed that reducing or eliminating specifically the early season nitrogen fertilizer applications can significantly reduce the nitrate loading rates. Any questions about that one?
Well, that's encouraging news. Is that something that the ag community concurs with in terms of
another outcome of the project, or let me say, another part of the executive officer's report was to inform you that the results of this were presented by Tim Hartz at a recent annual conference on irrigation and nutrient management that is held annually in the Salinas Valley, and that they had the best attendance ever, over 100 growers, including some of the biggest lettuce farmers and distributors in the Salinas Valley in attendance. So it seems to be commonly being discussed and starting to be more well-known.
Yeah, in fact, at one of the recent board meeting we had, there was a speaker who alluded to the fact that we were in the dark age in regard to nutrient management. And, if you make a Google search to, the California Department of Food and Agriculture on nutrient management, you're going to find 15,000 hits. So I don't think we're in the dark age. You know, we may not be in full sunshine, but there's a lot of information available, and obviously a very strong interest for agriculturists, because it's also an economic benefit of being able to optimize fertilizer use with a rising cost of fertilizer. That's a big cost of a production.
Okay. The name Hartz, that's, we're not getting him confused with Harder, right? There's a Harder from UC Davis.
Right, and
on ground nitrate and groundwater.
Right, and Mr. Chairman, you asked me to have Dr. Harder come and brief the board on the Senate Bill X2 report. The State Board received a report on that just recently, and Region 5 either has already or is scheduled for one as well. So I talked to Dr. Harder some time ago and asked him if he could actually come to this meeting. Turns out he's out of the country for an extended period of time right now. But he's lined up to come to our September 1st meeting. And he said actually that would be great timing because that's the same day, I believe, that their draft report will be out. So he'll be done with the draft report. And just to refresh your memories, we've talked about this a little bit in the past as far as this Senate Bill 2X study, but it's I believe it's $3 million that was allocated and actually spread between our two regions, the Central Valley region and our region, and more specifically the Tulare Basin and the Lower Salinas, and looking at the issue of nitrate, excessive nitrate in groundwater. So anyway, we look forward to that September 1st. But this Hartz and Harder, very similar, but they're colleagues, but not the same.
All right, next item. The lagoon study. It's too bad Karen isn't here to talk to us more about this.
Yes, so this was follow-up to a report we provided in May that had the general summary of the results of the lagoon study that was conducted by the UC Davis Marine Pollution Studies Laboratory and the U.S. Geological Survey. And they specifically focused on lagoons at the bottoms of Salinas, Pajaro, and Santa Maria River watersheds. We also included some follow-up information on Oso Flaco Lake in this particular EO report for you. As far as the lagoon study, it was the first to identify several fungicides. Specifically, I'm not going to be able to say these correctly because I've never heard them pronounced. Azoxystrobin, pyroclostrobin, and boscalid. And they were found in the ambient environment in our region's waters as well as in fish tissue. And the report describes the use history of these fungicides and some of the recent changes in the use locally and their respective risk to water quality and environmental and human health. And then we also give you some follow-up information on how we're addressing and proposing to address DDT concentrations in Oso Flaco Lake.
So I see the follow-up here is that staff is forwarding this to DPR, the report. And DP, should that be DP? It says DPA staff. You mean DPR staff has indicated they will include these chemicals in upcoming surveys in our region? I'd like to get some more feedback from DPR staff as to whether what they're doing about any monitoring of fungicides in receiving waters and how these results affect their opinion or what they're doing in terms of application protocols.
Okay.
I mean, so far all they have said to us is they will include these chemicals in upcoming surveys. That seems to be kind of a milquetoast response. I would just like to get more information about whether they think this is significant or not.
Okay. So. We'll have staff talk to them, and then we'll report back on that.
Okay. All right. Next part of this report.
Oh, just one last comment.
Go ahead, Dr. Hunter.
Just to be clear, It appears that these fungicides are meet human health protection levels. So what we've identified are impacts to fish, freshwater fish and invertebrates, or estuarine aquatic life. Is that the case for all three?
Actually, take a look at page 8. Monica, and go down to the second to the last paragraph on page 8.
Mm-hmm.
That indicates that in fish,
mm-hmm.
okay, supposedly fish that could be consumed,
mm-hmm.
that there was levels exceeding the EPA tissue
mm-hmm.
residual level for meat and poultry.
Mm-hmm.
So it, you know, potentially there is a human health risk.
Okay.
To the recreational sport fishermen.
Yes.
Not just to wildlife.
Right. Okay.
That's why I'd like more back from DPR staff as to what their reaction is to this.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what does public health have a role in this? Do we know? Can we alert them also to new information?
Sure, we can. I don't know if they track this kind of a thing. This is kind of a unique study. It's the first time we've gotten fungicide data that we're aware of. So
even if they're not, I mean, I think it's good to raise the flag and say, here's new data. Where does it fit into your program if it does? And
right.
It may put it in the lineup.
But, right. So we've noted here that we know that this report has gone to the Department of Pesticide Regulation. And we can certainly send it with public health as well. We've been in contact with them lately on other issues.
So on other issues.
We have a contact.
Yeah, I'd be interested because I know that recreational fishers are a target for these kinds of problems. I don't know what the network is for contacting them. I'm guessing Fish and Game also has a way of alerting them because I know coastal recreational fishers definitely get information on potential contaminants in certain fish species. So maybe there's another possible information delivery, you know, to recreational fishers that would be important. Explore that. Thank you.
Okay.
Anything else on this one?
Let's see what else is on your report.
We're a little out longer than we said, but we just have one more. We have a couple more. Should we keep going? Finish the item.
Yeah, okay. Why don't we finish the item
okay.
then?
Okay. So the next one is a report, status report of the PXP Water Reclamation Facility in Arroyo Grande. I think a board member asked for status of this one, I believe. And basically, the report lets you know that they're expected to begin facility construction in the third quarter of 2011. They haven't negotiated any agreements to use the treated water for irrigation at this point, and they already have an NPDES permit issued.
Okay.
And I'll be
Dr. Wolf.
Just a little input on that. Where the 0.84 million gallon a day could be reused for irrigation on agricultural properties, the estimated amount of RO water production is in the range of 10 years or so, if I recall, which after that time, all of the available oil will have been extracted, and then they will shut down the system. So I think we need to be careful for the unintended consequence of promoting additional agriculture codependent on this water. And then after 10 years, there's 750,000 gallon no longer available. And where is it going to come from is groundwater. So in reviewing their proposal and the agriculture use, we need to keep in mind that this is a relatively short window of water available.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay.
AB 85.
Yes. We have an update on the status of the on-site wastewater system regulations that are in Assembly Bill 885.
Why doesn't the policy. France, Bobby Webby, whoever, give us this update?
She probably only knows what's in that report. And as we say in that report, we'll continue to provide you with updates and new information as it progresses.
Okay. All right.
All right. Last item is information on our staff project to notify agencies and property owners about nitrate problems and domestic well sampling. And the project goals are to provide domestic individual well owners and general public with information regarding potential nitrate impacts and if their wells have become impacted, if we know that, and also to inform them of any available testing opportunities. And we're trying to create more testing opportunities, particularly for the domestic well owners. And also to develop a higher resolution data set of nitrate impacts to domestic drinking water supplies and shallow aquifers, so improve our understanding of the conditions of those aquifers where domestic drinking water supplies are being drawn from. And staff is currently working to secure potential third parties to implement some of this work, as well as to allocate the funding to pay for domestic well sampling and the notification efforts. Any questions?
Okay.
All right. If not, then there's the administrative reports. We have a budget update and a list of presentations and training. There are no questions, and that's it for the executive officer's report.
Okay.
Oh, correct. Thank you. We do have a speaker card.
Yeah.
We should do that.
We have two speaker cards.
Yep.
Okay. Darlene Din and Danny Merkley.
Good afternoon. Thank you again for an opportunity. I want to read an item in as it relates to Mr. Tim Hart's report so that I accurately reflect it into the record. The PG&E Settlement Fund research by Tim Hart was not intended for regulatory purposes, instead for grower education. I am concerned that the staff report is written in an effort to support a regulation and does not adequately explain that the fields in the study do not represent all lettuce fields, but rather only those where a large amount of residual soil nitrate is carried over from a previous crop. We have spoken to Dr. Hart, who confirmed that limitation of his study and expressed his hope that his study would not be interpreted to say that the entire lettuce industry could achieve the degree of reduction in N fertilizer applied that was possible in the field test. These fields were chosen specifically because they represented an opportunity for growers to reduce N application, thereby both reducing environmental N load and saving money. I encourage you to read Dr. Hart's full report for a more accurate summary of his findings. And the reason why I bring that is that we are investing a lot of money, and the regional board is, the state board, other entities into commodities to evaluate these problems and aggressively look at agronomy and water quality. And these have to be fully vetted and peer-reviewed, and there's still a tremendous amount of work. And we're at the beginning stages of catching science to the lag time on regulations. And while we're very excited, and I want to highly compliment the growers and to further support the staff's that it is one of the best attended grower meetings. Hartnell is aggressively looking at some research projects on the ground that we hope to have well attendance. But because this is really about the second crop versus the first crop and looking at a total nitrate budget, we thank you, Dr. Wolf, for your statements on it. We're moving forward. We just caution on making any statements that potentially the public or in the summary could look at that we have the silver bullet yet. And we thank you for your time and energy and continued support.
Thank you. And, you know, the way I take a report like that is simply that there's room for improvement.
Absolutely, you know, and we're excited about that.
Yeah.
We're just careful right now.
Right.
Because the public is getting excited with certain initial stages, and we see real hope, but we're not there yet.
Right.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Merkley.
Good afternoon, Chairman. Thank you. Danny Merkley, California Farm Bureau. Just on that same item, I just wanted to express in my entire life farming, fourth-generation California farmer, I have seen many, many changes over the breadth of those years. I remember when I first got out of Cal Poly, I thought to myself, even though I was raised on the farm and worked on the farm, that, well, I'll do this a couple of years and I'll get it down and we'll just kind of I'll repeat things every year. I've never seen one year the same. Cultural practices have changed drastically in the 30-some years since I've been out of college. Practices for irrigation, fertilizing, pesticide applications. I mean, I used to put DDT on. I would probably be a little taller if I hadn't, but at any rate, it is what it is. The point I wanted to make is that study, other studies are very good. They're ongoing. They are something that agriculture continues to look at, adapt, and change. And Mr. Briggs' commentary or editorial over the weekend, he talked about agriculture's ability to adapt and to progress and to change, and that's true. And like any other group, we have a few that maybe drag along a little bit slower. But I just wanted to caution the board that when we do look at those studies, and you alluded to this just a second ago too, that it is a piece to the puzzle, but it is not the end all, and it's something that we in agriculture look at and continue to invest in, and work with the universities, both the UC and the CSU system, to try and find these improvements. So thank you.
Thank you. Okay, that concludes this item and our speakers. Why don't we break for lunch? And when are we going to return? 45 minutes, an hour? What is any closed session items?
We do.
We do?
Need to announce them. For closed session, we'll be discussing closed session number item 8 and personnel.
8 and personnel, okay.
Probably an hour.
An hour. Okay, so 1 o'clock, we will reconvene our meeting.
Oh, why don't you say 1:15? It's 12:15 right now.
Okay.
1:15.
1:15.
I just wanted to point out one other thing really quickly, that when we come back, we're going to rearrange for our final agenda items, which are more informal staff board discussion. We call it our annual offsite. So just wanted to make people aware of that.